Scratchy. Edna Carson is in the car in the fancy pants driveway of Seabed Bed and Breakfast, keeping an eye on Henry. An old girl dozing off in the late afternoon sun, she's guessing that's how it looks, but her eyes are open just enough for between the lashes surveillance of her husband. She can smell her hairspray, decades of it embedded in the grubby grey velour of the headrest. Hairspray never stopped her getting bed hair when she fell asleep on car trips, even short ones, but at least it's her dirt she's sniffing. Not like poor Coral Dawkins, who brushed her face against her own car seat one evening last winter and caught a whiff of her husband's harlotry with skinny Molly Devoy. 40 years of Weller, 20 of them right there under her cheek. You can tell a Weller woman by the way she wears her hair. Edna hums that little tune, knows it's going to stay with her all night now, drive her crazy when she's trying to sleep. She should have changed brands somewhere down the line before her head started taking Weller for granted, before Weller retaliated with the bed hair. Over on the doorstep of the B&B, Henry presses the bell again. He looks anxiously towards the car, towards Edna, who stays quite apparently asleep. That little boy lost expression used to charm her to bits. It startled her out of the grief of losing Graham Burling all those decades back. Not anymore. The neediness of that particular look has become suffocating in recent times. She has resisted comparing Henry with Graham, who had the unfair advantage of dying tragically at 22, at the peak of manly perfection. Nevertheless, annoying things about Henry keep cropping up. It has, for example, just this minute occurred to her that he doesn't ever throw anything out. Through eyelash prisms, Edna contemplates his back view. That old plum sweatshirt riding his slumped shoulders. Levi's jeans. On a 65-year-old, honestly, sagging in the backside, as though someone has taken a pin and pushed it through the tough blue denim and popped both his buttocks. His beige belt puckering at the loose fabric, drawing it in tight and high around his waist. Edna finds two things revolting, generally, when it comes to men and their trousers. Pants pulled up high, Henry's are almost under his armpits, does he not realise? And boys who insist on wearing them so low you can see most of their underwear, or, God forbid, their backsides. Edna feels an urge to grab teenagers falling down pants when she sees them, pull them right down to the ground. Once, she actually did it. Thinking about that day is something Edna avoids. But now it's too late. She is thinking about it. Henry was to blame for what happened that day, and thanks to those ridiculous jeans, it's all his fault again. Walking along Main Street, following Toby, him all skinny hips and big swagger, unaware she was right behind him. It was the language that sent Edna over the edge, the F's and C's coming out of the mouth of her secretly the favourite grandchild. In a flash, she got it. She'd been duped. By Toby, definitely, but the whole family was in on it, probably. Two quick steps and two light tugs. That's all it took, and those saggy jeans were a puddle of blue on the footpath. Toby's fists flew as he swung around. He gasped when he saw it was her, scrambled to pull up his pants. "Watch your language, Toby Carson," Edna said, stepping around the spectacle. His mates whooped and hollered. One of them tried to high-five her. She ignored him. "I'll buy you a belt for Christmas," she added. She had marched on, heart thumping. Her face was hot. The reality of it, pulling down someone's trousers in public, in Main Street, felt like hands around her neck choking her. Never mind the mitigating circumstances, as they said on the crime shows. Never mind that her grandson had been behaving like a gang member. Never mind that her husband, that very morning, had come into the bedroom while she was naked and had casually turned and looked away from her. Edna, reaching for her knickers and slip, glanced at his reflection in the mirror. His mouth was turned down in disgust. His distaste for what he'd just seen was plainly visible on his nice Henry Carson face. Never mind any of that. Her feet took her into the bookshop. They did a circuit of the magazines and greeting cards and finished up at the lotto counter. Those feet of hers had already forgotten she had bought a lotto ticket earlier that week. If the sunlight's too strong, you get funny little black squiggles against pink eyelids, tiny little moving things that remind Edna of some documentary she once saw about bacteria in a petri dish. You could actually end up distracted by them, watching them squirm around, linking up, breaking apart, until you dozed off. That's happened a few times before when she's been keeping an eye on Henry. A white net curtain twitches at the B&B upstairs window, the one directly above the doorway where Henry's waiting. A hand pulls the curtain right back, and a face looks down at the car, down at the top of Henry's balding head. It's Irene Fulton. "Call me Irene, please," she'd insisted when they'd arrived on Friday night. And she's smiling. "She'll be relieved we're still here," Edna thinks. She would have been looking at the clock, wondering if we'd sneaked away without paying. Irene taps at the window, waving at Henry, and Henry looks up. He smiles and waves back. Edna is amazed how easy it is to stay still, feigning sleep, yet utterly alert. Her eyes, ears, even her nose attuned to this man who has been her husband for 33 years, and this woman who is Irene Fulton, who blatantly flirted with Henry this weekend. The only discomfort is the seatbelt. Over the recent months, while Edna has put on weight, it has uncurled itself out of its little plastic cover to accommodate her. A little more, a little more, and now it's at the end of its tether. Behind the lotto counter, there was a long black fringe. The face underneath was busy with a cell phone somewhere down low. Edna picked up a heavy diary from a display stand and smacked it down hard on the counter. The girl looked at her. "No lights on there," thought Edna. "Do you want that?" the girl asked. "No." The way the girl blinked, the slowness of it, made Edna genuinely wonder if she was all right in the head. The girl dropped her gaze back down to her phone. "I just want you to look at me when you're serving me," said Edna. That didn't seem a lot to ask, although after the morning she'd had, Edna was no longer sure about the benefits of looking and not looking. "How can I help you?" "How could you be helped?" "A new body, please. One that doesn't make my husband dry rich. Oh, and a grandson who doesn't say the C word in Main Street." Edna scanned the rows of bright metallic tickets under the plastic display shelf in front of her. "I'll take one of these," she said, pointing. "These things. What do you call them?" "Scratchies," said the girl. "Pardon me?" "Scratchies. You scratch the top to see what's underneath. Which one do you want?" "Oh, it doesn't matter. You choose." The girl ripped off a red ticket and handed it to Edna. "When are they drawn?" Edna asked, handing over the money. "What? Pardon? Huh? You say pardon, not what?" The girl stared. "When do you find out if you've won?" The girl popped a bubble of bright blue gum. "Oh, it's different from lotto. You scratch three squares. No more, or the card's invalid. If you get three numbers the same, you've won that amount. You can just collect the money straight away." Edna took the ticket over to a shelf by the window. Her fingernails were too short to scratch. She felt around in her jacket pocket and found a coin. There were nine squares in a tic-tac-toe arrangement. Edna scraped the coin across the first square, the top left-hand one. The coin skidded under the pressure of her thumb right across the card, leaving a white trail in the silver of the other two squares on the top line. Three squares, partially scratched, all in a row. Well, that was that sorted. Edna set to uncovering the numbers. The silvery stuff rolled away under the sharp edge of the coin. The first square revealed $100,000. So did the second. And the third. Edna blinked at the little red ticket, trying to remember what the girl had said. When her heartbeat got itself back to normal, she pulled her reading glasses out of her bag. Slowly, making sure the girl wasn't watching, she turned the ticket over. Something would not be in order. Most probably, she would have to do something extra, something impossible, humiliating for someone her size. Crawl through a military obstacle course in a bikini, for example. Or else the ticket would have already expired. But everything was all right. All she had to do was take the ticket to the counter. Walking back to the counter was not possible. Edna's independent feet didn't want to go there. And now, of course, the girl was looking at her. "Are you all right, dear?" Edna got in first. She was surprised at the sound of herself. How calm she was. The girl blew another gum bubble and wandered off without replying. Edna opened the zip on the little pocket inside the lining of her handbag and slipped the red ticket inside. Then she zipped it shut, making sure it was closed all the way across, and secured the clasp at the top of the bag. Irene Fulton's made it to the door. She leans against it, her arms crossed against her pointy little bosom, her bony hips jutting forward as she scuffs at a mark on the step with her pale pink slipper. Henry's hands are deep in his pockets, and he rocks backwards and forwards on the heels of his shoes. They are both staring at the sky, squinting, looking for rain clouds, maybe. Look this way, if it's a dark cloud you're expecting. Edna mutters. She can do it without moving her lips. Irene Fulton and Henry Carson. If they both took one step forward, just one each, their thin bodies would lock together. They are made for each other. Edna almost wants them to do it. She wants to see how perfect they would be. Just the one step, and then back again smartly. By the time Edna got home from the bookshop, her hands were sweaty and her left arm ached, shoulder to thumb, from holding her handbag so tightly to her body. Henry was watering the garden as she walked along the little path from the front gate to the unit. He smiled and flicked the spray in her direction. Edna didn't bother with a sidestep. He would never dare to wet her. She pulled herself tall and sucked in her stomach. "How is town?" he asked. "Quiet," she said, pulling open the screen door and going inside. In the cool, dim kitchen, she put the kettle on and set her bag on the table. Her hand shook as she took the ticket from the bag. She handled it delicately around the edges like an old, precious photo. The writing on the back was tiny. Even with her reading glasses on, it was difficult to make out all the conditions. Another bodily failure, she thought, the second in a single day. At this rate, she'd be completely disintegrated by dusk. It appeared she had definitely won $100,000. In the case of the big prizes, the conditions said, you had to phone a number in Wellington, phone or email. You made arrangements for payment that way. Edna smiled, imagining Miss Blanky Blank at the bookshop trying to count $100,000 out of the till and trying to count full stop. She read on. There was an expiry date, but it was months away. Nothing to worry about there. Nothing either about having to jump through hoops to collect the money. Although you would never know what might happen once you actually contacted them. Outside the kitchen window, there was the sound of Henry's voice. He talked exclusively to tomatoes. Why on earth would you have a conversation with a lettuce? He said, smiling, when Edna once asked him about it. She got up from the table, the red scratchy cradled in her hand, and opened the screen door. On the walk home, she'd practiced how this moment might go. What are you doing Saturday, Henry Carson? Fancy a cruise? Henry was crouched down at the tomatoes, gently picking green aphids off the leaves. He looked up at her, squinting into the sun. His eyes travelled the length of her. Nothing as obvious as the morning's expression, but plain enough to see. Already, Edna thought, already he's learning to mask it. What have you got there, sweet? Edna's arm draped itself across her belly. Her fingers found her hip and hugged it close. Nothing. Do you want a cup of tea? Her other hand closed carefully over the scratchy. Edna's pleased she put the car window down earlier. It would be impossible now to unbuckle the seatbelt, lean over, turn the key on, flip the window switch, all the while pretending to be asleep. It's been a lovely weekend, it really has, Henry's saying to Irene Fulton. We've been talking about it for ages, getting away. You know how you talk about these things, never quite get around to booking anything. I know exactly what you mean, Henry. Irene runs her hand through that great mane of hair, pushing it back off her pixie face. No bed here for Irene. All the time. I get offers from friends. We'll look after the B&B. You have a break. And do I take them up on it? Of course you don't, Irene Fulton, murmurs Edna. Why give someone else first pickings of other people's husbands? Edna's hot and uncomfortable now, and because of Henry's dilly-dallying, she needs to go to the toilet. It was Edna who thought of it. She's the one with the plans. If it were over to me, we'd never go anywhere. How long did he plead with her to pack a weekend bag? It'll be good for you, Edna, a change of scene. Eventually she gave in, knowing very well it wouldn't be good for anyone. Except, as it turned out, a sliver of a tart named Irene Fulton. Well, I'm glad you've enjoyed yourselves, both of you. And you know, you're always welcome back here. I always invite the nice ones back. Irene Fulton is leaning forward towards Henry. Oh my lord. Edna holds her breath and watches. Irene reaches out, rests her hand on Henry's arm, on his bicep. It looks like Irene Fulton is going to kiss Henry on the cheek. But Edna can't see what's happening. Irene has positioned her mouth on the other side of Henry's head. Between Edna's eyes and Irene's lips, there is the obstruction of Henry. Did she kiss Henry? Or did she whisper something in his ear? And which would be worse, Edna wonders. It's quite the thing these days, a little kiss on the cheek, by the way of farewell. A kiss does not necessarily mean anything. A whisper could be another matter entirely. Do you take guests all year round or just over summer? Henry asks, once Irene Fulton pulls back, a little too loudly to be innocent. "For God's sake," Edna says, though not loud enough to be heard. She flicks the seatbelt buckle open, relieving the pressure on her bladder. "Get your wallet out, Henry Carson. Pay the woman." Henry was still carrying on with the tomatoes. Edna went back inside, switched the kettle on again. She took pen and paper from the top drawer of the sideboard and sat down in the living room, away from her husband and his vegetables and the handbag with the scratchy in it. The thing on her mind was weirdness, degrees of it. Her lists often had titles for and against, but those categories didn't gel in relation to the issues of this strange day. She settled for a single column, ranging from most weird to least. She'd go with gut feeling. Pulling someone's pants down in Main Street. She wrote that down first. What could be weirder? There'd be fallout once Toby told his mother. Even if he didn't, others in the street had seen the debacle. Edna felt obliged to acknowledge that regardless of circumstances, she was 57 years old and should have known better. "Having your husband look you over like a piece of meat," she wrote next. "Mutton, not eye fillet, twice in one day, and it wasn't lunchtime yet." Winning $100,000. Edna looked at it, written down. Any other day, she thought, any other day, winning $100,000 would have seen her dancing for joy, reaching for the telephone to share the good news. But there it was, number three on the list. And not a joyous thing at all. Edna had a headache. She tore her list up into tiny pieces and threw them in the rubbish bin. "All year round I operate," Irene Fulton says to Henry. "I can't afford to turn anyone away. I need the income, being on my own." Edna thinks that quite possibly her bladder will burst if Henry doesn't move it. She shifts in her seat. The day is getting hotter despite the hour. Her dress is damp with sweat beneath her heavy legs. "It's not easy being alone," bleats Irene Fulton. "Gordon Bennett, get the violins out." Edna's eyes are open, as wide as eyes can be. She's looking at Henry and Irene Fulton, and they are looking back at her, smiling, both of them. Did she miss something, unbuckling her seatbelt? Edna smiles back. What else can she do? Henry's beckoning her. "You're awake. Come and say goodbye to Irene," he calls out. Easing her body sideways out of the car, she pulls the damp dress away from the back of her legs. She hitches it down in the front, out of the crevice between her bust and her stomach. Her legs are stiff after the sleep charade. "Mind if I use your bathroom, Irene?" "Go right on up there, Edna." Irene steps back away from the doorway onto the next step next to Henry, as though Edna is a wide load on the back of a slow-moving lorry. Top of the stairs, right down the end of the hallway. There's plenty of evidence that Mr. Fulton provided nicely for Irene before slipping off the mortal coil. Lardro figurines everywhere. Edna counts seven in the upstairs hallway alone. They're expensive, some of them upwards of $1,000 a piece. Edna's seen them in the magazines. One catches her eye, a slender, graceful couple ballroom dancing. This particular piece has been gathering dust for years in the jeweller's window back home in Main Street. The woman's dress flies out behind her, both her tiny feet are off the ground. Edna tries to imagine how it would feel being so light that both your feet flew out behind you when you danced a waltz. The bathroom's right down the end, all the other doors leading off the hallway are closed. Edna doesn't risk opening them in case they squeak. She can still hear the conversation downstairs through the open window in the stairwell. "Of course, business tapers off over winter, but you'd be surprised how many people like to take a break at the beach, even if it's cold." As Edna shuts the bathroom door, she imagines Irene Fulton doing a little shiver, a little shimmy in front of Henry to illustrate how cold she gets in the middle of winter all alone. It pulsed. Edna swore the little red $100,000 scratchy beat like a tiny human heart in the lining of her leather handbag. Every time she walked past it, there on the sideboard in the kitchen, Edna felt a tingle at the back of her head, just below her hairline. Elation followed smartly by a rush of bile as her stomach churned. It didn't just affect her when she was in the kitchen. Edna was all over the place mood-wise after her win. One morning she'd wake up feeling fine. She'd get on the bathroom scales and see she'd lost weight. She spent the rest of the day browsing magazines. She could afford anything she wanted, including surgery to reduce her size. She celebrated the revelation by finishing off a block of chocolate over lunch. The next day, she'd catch Henry giving her the look again. He was getting clever about hiding it, but she was one step ahead. She was on to his subtle strategies for exiting the business end of marriage. She wondered whether it was possible to have a relapse of menopause. God knows that had been a strange enough time. She'd done some odd things then, but nothing like checking a 65-year-old man's drawers for condoms, which is what she did one afternoon when Henry was at bridge. After she'd gone through the entire chest, Edna sat on the end of the bed and cried. She couldn't stop. "Look at the state of you," she said to her reflection in the mirror. Her face had puffed out, her eyes swollen to narrow slits. "Imagine if you'd actually found some." The scratchy stayed zipped in the pocket of her handbag. She couldn't get it out again. The truth of it was, she couldn't even bring herself to use that particular handbag. Irene Fulton's bathroom is the size of a suburb. Edna is in a hurry to get to the toilet. After, she tiptoes to the door and shuts it properly, clicks the lock. Through the open window, she can hear the distant murmur of Henry and Irene's conversation. She washes her hands at the enormous basin. There are gleaming white tiles everywhere, shiny chrome fittings stamped with a name Edna can't pronounce. In front of her, behind a mirror, is Irene Fulton's vanity cabinet. Edna opens it. Face creams, tiny bottles of potions. Edna picks out one of the little bottles. The writing's in another language. So many perfumes, names she knows. Chanel, Yves Saint Laurent, Oscar de la Renta. Yes, she's seen them all in the magazines. She could have bought any one of these perfumes. She could have brought them all. Edna takes a stopper out of a bottle and sniffs. It is the same colour as her pee, and a thought crosses her mind. But she puts the stopper back and cradles the elegant bottle in her big hand, like King Kong cradling Fay Wray. Downstairs, outside, the chatter continues. They won't care how long she takes, Edna thinks. They'll chat on till the cows come home, Henry Carson and Irene Fulton. Edna looks at her reflection. Behind her, along the back wall of the bathroom, there's another mirror. If Edna gets the angles right, she can check out her bedhead damage. Irene Fulton certainly has a thing for mirrors. Twisting this way, and that reminds Edna of the nastiness yesterday downstairs in the bedroom of the B&B. It was early and Edna was still in bed, dozing on and off. Henry was standing at the big mirror in the bedroom. He'd got up while she was still asleep, showered and dressed. He was combing his hair. Edna pretended to sleep, but she kept an eye on him. He kept combing the same bit. Edna thought about saying something. Then she noticed that his eyes weren't on his own reflection. And they weren't on her either, not this time. The bedroom curtains were open. Outside the window, Irene Fulton was gardening. She was dressed in an old t-shirt and shorts. She was bending over, tending to the flower bed. Henry was looking at her, at the view down the front of her t-shirt. Irene whistled softly and dug and planted, and Henry watched her in the bedroom mirror, his comb hovering over his head. On her way back down from the bathroom, Edna stops again to look at the Ladro dancers. She picks them up, feels the weight of them. She puts two fingers around the woman's fragile ankle and snaps off her foot. She tucks the tiny piece of pale porcelain down her bra. It is cooling and sharp against her breast. Sitting on the end of a bed, bawling her eyes out, because she had not found condoms hidden in her husband's chest of drawers. No wonder Henry was turning away from her. Quite possibly it wasn't about her weight at all. Maybe he simply didn't fancy cuddling up close to a lunatic. Edna heaved herself off the bed. It was 4:30, bridge finished around 5. Henry would be home in less than an hour. She went into the kitchen and took the handbag down off the dresser. Everything is changing. She said it out loud to the bag. It sat before Edna on the kitchen table. The late afternoon light filtered through the kitchen curtains, catching floating dust. Edna would not have been surprised if the handbag spoke back to her, the leathery folds forming supple lips, mouthing something profound, or crazy, or irrelevant. She sat for a bit longer, just in case it had something to say. On one of her better days after the scratchy win, Edna had clipped an advertisement out of the newspaper. It was for a 5-week, 7-country cruise. It cost $14,000. Now she pulled that clipping out of the bottom drawer of the dresser and she dialed the number on the page. When they asked her how she'd like to pay, she read out the 12 numbers of their credit card. Her hands were shaking as she opened her handbag. The little zip inside the lining was still closed. Edna pulled it gently open and took the red scratchy out of the pocket. They were like little soldiers, 3 platoons standing to attention across the top of the card. $100,000, $100,000, $100,000. Edna ran her finger across all of them. There were remnants of the silvery covering on the 3 boxes. Edna remembered how she'd just focused on uncovering the numbers standing there in the bookshop, scraping away with her coin. How she'd stopped, her heart pounding, as the identical digits revealed themselves. Now, with her little fingernail, she scraped the rest of the silver covering off the winning boxes. She was being so careful. It was just a tiny slip. Maybe her shaking hands were to blame. That was the logical reason for what happened next. Her little fingernail slid down the surface of the card through the middle of the right-hand box on the second row. The nail picked up all the silver covering like a spatula cleaned through a bowl of chocolate icing. Clearly revealed from under the silver covering of that fourth box was $2. When Henry came in from bridge, Edna was still sitting at the table. Her hands were folded in her lap. She was looking at the newspaper clipping. The scratchy sat next to it. Henry picked up the scratchy, glanced at the numbers revealed. Edna heard a sound come from the back of his throat, a little choke. Then he turned the card over and read the back. "Oh, Edna," he said. He sounded quite lost, as though he'd been the one to let his finger slip. "That bathroom certainly is something, Irene. All those mirrors makes the room feel twice the size." Edna walks back down the steps into the heat of the day. "Feels like you've got company wherever you go. That must be nice for you." Silence. "Speaking of going, Henry." Henry frowns, cocks his head to one side, smiles at Edna, then at Irene. "Leave, Henry. I'm talking about going home, not going to the bathroom. Irene doesn't want to stand on her doorstep all night." Thin laughter. Irene and Henry's laughter. Edna returns to the car and gets in. The seatbelt can wait until the last minute. She watches Henry pull his wallet out of his back pocket. He takes out the wad of notes in a rubber band. "It's all there, Irene. I tied it up so I didn't spend it." He laughs and Irene laughs and Edna has had enough of laughter. "Besides, it's not all there. Edna's taken 3 crisp $20 notes from the bundle. She did it at the cafe that morning after they visited the cash machine down on the waterfront. She slipped the notes out after Henry counted it while he was at the counter getting her another piece of chocolate brownie. Irene Fulton would not be the kind of woman to count money on her front doorstep," Edna thought, and Edna was right. Edna feels the first stab of regret as Henry walks towards the car, towards her, and is pulled up tight. High jeans. She's not sure yet whether she's sorry about the money or the ladro, but it's a positive sign, she thinks. A good sign, the regret coming so quickly. One day it might come soon enough to prevent her bad behaviour in the first place. Henry's face is all hope as he gets in the car. "Did you like that, Edna?" he asks, resting his scrawny gardener's fingers over her big soft hand, over the puckers of her knuckles. "We should go away soon again, do you think?" Edna doesn't trust her voice, so she nods. Then she closes her eyes, lets her head fall back against the headrest. Henry is looking at her. She can feel it. Feel his eyes roaming. In a sleepy kind of way, she turns away.